Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thanks. I feel like something of a gauntlet has been laid down, but, you know, we'll see how that goes. Just a quick introduction to me and NUS. I am the Vice President of Further Education, so I'm the elected student officer representing further education students, or more correctly, students in further education colleges. For National Union of Students. It's my full-time role. I'm in my second year doing it. Before I did this, I was sabbatical president at Cornwall College Students' Union, which I think at the time had about 2,000 HE and FE students. And while I was sabbatical president there, we went through IQER, which was a joyful and tiring experience for me. Many, many hours sort of sitting quietly in a dark room with the student rowing submission. Let's not go there. Before that, I was a further education student at Cornwall College. I didn't study in higher education, and then got elected to NUS. NUS, some of you kind of may know, but I think lots of people have maybe misconceptions about NUS. We are a confederation of student unions, so we're not an individual membership organisation. We don't represent individual students, we represent student unions in our membership. There are about 600 of them now. About 180 of those are higher education student unions, or student unions of higher education institutions, and the rest are further education. About 2 million of the students we have in membership through that structure are HE, and about 5 million are FE. So that kind of gives you a sense of what kind of membership we're looking at. And my role, I suppose, is representing the students that are my constituency, so further education students, and but working more kind of widely on further education and higher education policy, and campaigning, and meeting with kind of civil servants and ministers and people like you, and trying to make things better, not just for students now. And in that way, I think we're somewhat different from trade unions, in that actually we have a real vested interest in a education system that is more accessible for more people rather than just about the people we represent at the moment. But some of what I have in my presentation is slightly repetitive of some of the stuff that's gone on today, but I will try and skip through that as quickly as possible. So enhancing the student experience, I think that there are lots of ways in which we can do that, but I think first we need to examine actually if this works. We might examine nothing. Oh, okay. Examine what the student experience actually is. As I said, lots of people have kind of misconceptions about NUS and what NUS is. I think lots of people have maybe misconceptions about the student experience. Some people think that the student experience is this. But I would argue that the people who think that the student experience is this, I prefer that vision of it than the people who think the student experience is this. So an interesting sort of juxtaposition there for you. And actually, what we all know is that the student experience is neither of those things. But it's worth examining what we think about the student experience before we try to alter it. Because if we think that it's people sitting in bars and getting drunk and turning up late for lectures, then we're starting from the wrong position. And if we think it's people reading books in the grass, which actually that book doesn't look like it's got anything written in it, then we are, you know, much mistaken. Okay, so how do we measure the student experience? I think there are lots of ways to measure the student experience. Sometimes we just know because you get a feeling when you walk onto a campus of what the student experience is like. You know, if you walk into a campus and your sort of rag committee are running around in fancy dress and doing things and there's a buzz around the campus, you get an idea of what it's like to be a student there. If, you know, there are still people telling people not to run in the corridors, then you probably also get an idea of what the student experience is like. But we do put a lot of kind of interest, and we emphasise the National Student Survey a lot, which is important. It is a benchmark for, I don't necessarily think student experience, but I would say student satisfaction. And that's really important. It's important that we can measure ourselves against other people and make sure that we're not massively away from what the norm is to be expected. Obviously, you all use internal surveys, and they sort of patronise you. But is there something else? Is there another way that we measure the student experience? I think that there are, when I've kind of talked about the student experience more recently, and particularly for higher education students, I think the question people are expecting me to answer is what our students expect. Do students expect more now that they're paying more money? And do they expect more from their student experience? And hopefully we will either answer that or not today. So So the National Student Survey, here's some quick sort of kind of wordy representations of some graphs. There's increased satisfaction that staff make the subject interesting from last year, increased satisfaction with all other areas of teaching since last year, which is good all round. This is for HE and FE specifically. Students in HE and FE are 8% more satisfied than students who study in a university. My grammar is terrible. With the feedback they receive. And HE and FE students are 3% more satisfied that they have access to advice and support compared to 77% for university students, and more satisfied that they're given student choices. So you know, this is all positive across the board. They're satisfied that their course is running smoothly compared to university. They're less satisfied compared to university students, and they're also less satisfied with resources and access to IT and specialist equipment. I think all of that is pretty, you know, I think we all know these things. These are areas in which they are generally less satisfied every year. They're also 9% less satisfied with their students' unions. I mean, what I will say on this question, and this is, you know, just me getting my NUS line out there, is that I think if you ask people in this room what their student union was when they were at university, some people would say it was the bar. Some people would say it was the organisation that campaigned. Some people would say it was the organisation that went to London and took part in demonstrations. And some people would say that it was the organisation that took up their academic appeal and made sure that they could stay in university and continue their course. And so I think to ask people how satisfied they are with their student union is a kind of sort of misleading question. But, you know, that's just my opinion. Because actually, if you go up to somebody and ask how satisfied they are with their student union, one of them might be saying, actually, they're the reason I'm still here. And one of them saying, I don't really like the music they play on a Friday night. Because people have very differing perceptions of what their student union is and what it's there to deliver. Also, it's interesting to note that if you look at some of the best performing student unions on this question, they are some of the most well-funded student unions in the country, which is surprising. So Sheffield, Leeds, big universities that can spend £1.52 million in giving a block grant to their student union. My block grant when I was at Cornwall College for the student union was just under £10,000, and that was to cover 65,000 students rather than something, well, I don't know how many students there are at Leeds, 20,000 maybe, something about that. So there's some interesting things there, and I think it's important that we kind of look more carefully at this. And I also think, you know, to say that the not applicable question is, if somebody kind of says not applicable, that's always a negative thing, I think is misleading, actually. I think to say that you would tick the not applicable box because I think I wrote it down. My student union doesn't make a difference to me. I don't think that's necessary. I don't think we can suggest that that's what people mean when they tick that box and say, I'd like to kind of set the record straight a little bit on that one. But we'll move on. So internal surveys, who are you asking? What are you asking them? And what are you doing about it? One of the problems with the National Student Survey, from my point of view, along with lots of national surveys, is that it's a post-mortem of what's happening. As you said, it's equivalent to going out and... Oh, I'm not going out and buying something because it's very different, but it's going out and doing something and then looking back at it, because these are third year or second year students, they're final year students, and it's difficult for you to change their experience based on the results that you get. And so actually, I would suggest that it's maybe more useful to ask students throughout their course how you can improve, and to do that at a one-to-one level, go and actually speak to them, which is novel. What are you asking them? Are you asking them whether they're enjoying the bar, or are you asking them whether they feel supported? Sorry, just have a little bit of flu. And how are you acting on that? This is the thing, is we can say that we listen to students as much as we want about student experience, but if we're not responding and acting on it, then we kind of might as well not be doing it. But is there something else? I think one of my concerns about the National Student Survey, although I think it's incredibly important and I think that as many people as possible should use it because it becomes more statistically significant, obviously, the more people that use it. But are we talking about satisfaction of students, or are we talking about happiness of students, and which one of those is more important? And thank you. Thanks.
Imagine it's an alcoholic drink.
Right, crack casting aspersions about student unions once again.
That's my son's impression.
and are we talking about outcomes and retention and success for those students, and how do I identify and help those students to define what success is for them and then help them to achieve that rather than measuring them against a set of benchmarks we set nationally. What's interesting is all of the kind of statistics that me and Sammy have both shown you about the National Student Survey suggests that higher education HE&FE students are somehow one homogenous cohort of students throughout the country who all think the same things about their institutions, and that's not true. And some of the most wide ranging and diverse groups of students, and we really have to take that into consideration. That what the student experience that an 18-year-old boy wants when he leaves school is very different to the student experience that a student parent in their kind of late 40s who is working full time and trying to support their family wants. They want very different things, and we shouldn't necessarily be saying that because your institution offers one thing and not the other, that doesn't make you as good. You know, we need to get away from this defined model of what the student experience is, because it's actually a bit of a misnomer. There isn't one student experience. So it's really important that we kind of look at these different areas and how we make this about an individual experience for students and make sure that we're delivering to students what they're asking for rather than kind of making the assumption that we know what's right for them and then giving them that and then being surprised when they turn around and say, this is ridiculous, it's not what I want. These students have made a choice to go to your college and not go to university, and that might be because that might be a geographical choice. It might be because of their family circumstances, it might be because of all sorts of things, it might be because of the price, which is an issue. But for whatever reason they've chosen to come to your institution and not go to university, I think we need to be really careful that we make sure that we think about these people not necessarily as students, because for lots of these people their education is a kind of secondary part of what they are and how they would describe themselves. Lots of them would describe themselves primarily as parents or employees or employers or carers, and what are you doing in your institutions to support them to be those things as well as to support them to be a student. This is a person experience, not a student experience. They're more likely to be mature, they're more likely to be part-time, they're less likely to have hours to spend hanging around in student union bars and libraries and doing all sorts of things that are part of the student experience if you're 18 to 21 and go to a Russell Group university. And are your students looking for a student experience, or are they looking for a university experience? Because I think if you try and offer them a university experience, which is what lots of FE colleges try and do, is replicate what universities do, you may well be getting it wrong. That might be what they want. Your cohort of students might want a university experience, but I would imagine that if they've made a choice to go to a HE college, to an FE college, then they maybe made a choice not to go to a university, and we should be careful about that, I think. So how do we enhance it? I think we do enhance it by using student unions. I think that there are all sorts of things that student unions do and do very well to enhance the student experience. And that's not just about organising parties and having bars, but it is about taking up people's academic appeals, and it is about offering people an opportunity to have a say in their education. And it is about this formative rather than summative assessment of what you're delivering, because they can constantly give you feedback throughout the year that you can act on rather than filling in a survey after 2 or 3 years. Advocacy and support, I think, are really important things that can come from student unions but also should be coming from institutions. And I think there's a real problem that there is a gap in the further education sector in terms of student advocacy. Because there is lots of money sort of sloshing around in HE student unions to do advocacy on education issues for students, and there's not as much in further education. And we should be really careful about how students are given the opportunity to make formal complaints if that's what they want to do, and whether they're clear about how they do that, because we've just done some research that suggests that, on the whole, they're not very clear about how they take their complaints forward, which institution they complain to, and what right to external redress they have. And we need to sort that out, I think. There's also something about building a relationship with a HE partner. If you're not kind of the direct, if you're not validating your own degrees, then there's a HE partner out there somewhere who's validating those degrees for you. And they and their student union, I would argue, should be pulling their weight in terms of supporting your students. Because, you know, you don't just pay for a squiggle from a VC on a certificate at the end of the year. You pay for a relationship with each other. And actually, that's a really important part of the student experience, in my opinion. Something that we teach student union officers, which you might want to do. Wow, that was loud. is go out and talk to students and go out and listen to students. Goats and goals. Exciting. You've now been induced into the secret code world of student unions. So I think that there are still some questions sort of in the air about, do students expect more or a different student experience now that they're paying more money? I think some of them might. But I also am a firm believer that people will respond in the way that you treat them. And if you treat your students like consumers and talk to them as if it's a transactional consumer model, then they will probably behave like consumers. If you treat them as partners in their education and try and put the funding issue to one side and actually focus on a good quality of education and a good quality of experience for that person, they're less likely to demand things on a, well, I've paid £6,000, £8,000, £9,000 a year for this, so why aren't you doing this? Because actually that's not the relationship that students want, and it's also not the relationship that institutions want. I think there's a big difference between value for money and a quality experience. You can measure value for money in lots of different ways. Value for money could mean the number of books in a library. It could mean being able to get to a computer, and those are all good things. It could mean contact hours. It could mean that you're happy. But actually, university experiences and higher education experiences aren't necessarily about those things. They're about good quality teaching, and sometimes that's challenging, and sometimes that means being left on your own to do things. And that's, people confuse these two things, and actually I think quality experience is much, much more important than saying that you offer people value for money. So like, I would love to get away from the idea that we market ourselves by saying we'll give you good value for money, because that's not what we do. It's really not what we do. I think that it's worth looking back at service level agreements, because I think that's an area in which we should be building in a work between higher education student unions and your student unions on your campuses, and which is really important. I think we often look at four areas of student experience when we look at higher education, and we look at application systems, and we often look at them through the lens of 18-year-olds applying to UCAS. We need to not do that for these people. We think about accommodation because we assume that all higher education students live in halls in their first year. Another lie. Classroom experience, as if all higher education students work in the classroom. And then the lifestyle, so imagining that these people don't work outside of their education. And these are the four areas that are covered in the 1994 group research report on student experience. So I would kind of suggest that if you are thinking about student experience in HE and FE, don't read that. Because I think there are four different areas that are really important for the students that you work with. I think one is information, advice and guidance around fees, but also around access and a better understanding of actually how the system works, and that, you know, you won't pay more if you borrow more. And also you're less likely to pay that back anyway by virtue of the fact you're going to a HE and FE institution. You are less likely to pay back all of your student loan. But also information, advice and guidance about the kind of courses that you can access and the things that you could do and the places that you can go. Something about the way that we ritualise transition. We spend a lot of time looking at the transition that an 18-year-old makes to university, leaving home, buying cutlery, you know, going out, ringing their mum, asking what they should take to university in the morning, all of that sort of stuff, that sort of rite of passage stuff. We'd spend a lot of time thinking about that in the HE sector. We don't spend a lot of time ritualising the transition for adults to get back into higher education, and not even get back into higher education, but to make them feel comfortable walking onto a college campus surrounded by possibly 14 to 16-year-olds. And that's a really difficult transition for those people to make. Being taught by people who are younger than being taught by people who are young enough to be their children, and that's something that we have to make a bigger deal about, and we have to be more supportive to those people. I guess the very quickly following on from that is induction. We are very bad at, I think, at teaching people how to learn when they come back into higher education. We assume that they turn up knowing how to write essays in lots of places. Lots of people are really good at it, but we need to make real examples of that best practice, because if you've been working in industry for 20 years, the last thing you've been doing is probably writing essays. So let's do some stuff on that, like learning how to be a student, not just sort of learning how to, like, where the toilets are, because that's orientation, that's, you know. And then missing out all of the teaching stuff and moving on to progression. I think there's a real issue, and there was a real issue at a college that I won't name, where the top-up year had been defined when the service level agreement was written down. The top-up year, like, you could definitely get onto your third year at this university if you'd done a foundation degree and passed, then you'd definitely get onto this third year. And the third year for all of those students on about 20 different courses was sports science. So you could do a foundation degree completely unrelated, and you would end up going to the university, the only university that would guarantee you a place. But you had to study sports science in your third year, which is ridiculous if you want to be a marine biologist and you know, all other sorts of things. And so we need to be really careful about making sure that there are real pathways for people, and not just pathways that offer you a third year at university, but offer you a third year that's useful for you and useful to get into work. Because I would argue that higher education and further education colleges is more instrumental for people than it is at universities. Universities is often about a rite of passage. It's often about defining yourself against kind of society's measure of success. But for people going back into further education colleges to study HE courses, it's much more practical. It's much more about how you move forward in your life. And there are decisions that you've made really carefully, and we should respect that, I think. And also destinations. Are we actually supporting people to get anywhere with this, or what are we achieving by offering these courses? Quickly, I think that there's one area we need to be really careful of, and that's about the future of the higher education system, because it will have a huge impact on the student experience, because it is financially and economically unsustainable, and I think we're all aware of that. There will be a £250 million black hole in government funding by 2015, and something will have to give. One of the real problems and one of the real concerns that we have at NUS is that the terms and conditions of loans aren't written into primary legislation, and which means they can be changed at any time. And it's not to say that they shouldn't necessarily be changed, or there are no circumstances under which those terms and conditions of those loans should be changed, but I'm pretty sure that if that was going to happen, I don't want Vince Cable to just be able to click his fingers and change them. I'd much rather it went through proper parliamentary scrutiny, because that's what will have a real impact on the amount that people are repaying when they're in work, not even the level of fees. Fees could go up and it would have less of an impact on how much they repay than if the interest rate goes up on these loans, which it could do at any moment. So I think we should be really careful about how we plan for change in the future of the system, because I think that it's something that the HE sector should be, if it isn't already, planning for. And I think that's it.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.